This podcast has been certified spooky by Alternate Reality. Alternate Reality is the trusted name in Halloween-themed podcast, and if it doesn't say certified spooky, then it's not an Alternate Reality podcast. Look for the certified spooky seal on all episode art and the certified spooky message at the beginning of each episode. Thank you.
Welcome to Alternate Reality, episode 399. The sweet march to 400.
Alternate Reality is a podcast about comics, comic-related media, and comic-related merchandise. We do reviews of all sorts, TV, video games, movies, and comic issues. So be warned, the following show material contains spoilers. If you have not read your books, seen the movies, played the games, so forth and so on, then you may want to stop the show until you have done so, or you can proceed at your own caution. You have been warned.
Welcome to Alternate Reality, the comic book podcast. My name is John.
And I'm Charlie.
And we're here every so often to talk to you about all the things going on in the world of comics.
Every once in a while.
Just as soon as we can get together and sit down and record, we'll put something out. That's kind of the way it goes. And we know it's been a while since we've been with you last. It was exactly 1 month ago since we last recorded. So by the time you hear this, it'll be approximately 1 month since you last heard our show. We apologize for that big delay. We explained at the time that I had some medical issues. I had to go all the way to Cleveland to see
about. That was all a lie.
Yeah, it was actually espionage and intrigue and foreign affairs and spies and things like that.
If I'd tell you, I would have to kill you.
Yeah. No, actually, I did go to Cleveland and saw some doctors up there. It was a really cool place.
He made fun of them in text message.
Cleveland's not so much a cool place as the medical facility we went to. Cleveland, kind of a dirty city.
Yeah, it's a rat hole.
Yeah. But anyway, they did have a nice park that we went to one afternoon. And the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is up there. And that was pretty cool. Stopped by there for an afternoon. So, but...
pictures?
Yeah, we did. Put some online. I think we did. Anyway.
Go to a hotel?
Yeah, well, we stayed in a hotel all week. We didn't sleep in the car.
Tell us the whole story. Tell me about every day of your vacation during this.
It wasn't a vacation. It was a medical leave. I was up there and I was laying on tables and they were poking and prodding me with things. It was kind of like being abducted by aliens, except there were people in white lab coats. But anyway.
Unlike real alien abductions, where there are aliens.
Yes. Or government officials in white lab coats with alien masks on. But so we were out for that, and we got back, and then they gave me a bunch of shots and stuff for inoculations and made me feel bad for a few days. So we didn't do the first show we were supposed to do when we got back. So here we are. It's been a full month since we did a show. We apologize about the delay, but we thank you for being patient, and hopefully we've got a good show lined up for you tonight. Couple things going on. This is the beginning of October. Halloween season is always a big deal here at the Alternate Reality Podcast. So I'll be selecting some scary, spooky music for our themes and stuff on our intro and exits. I hope you guys enjoy those selections.
Does Kelly pick it up when you hit the table like that?
Yes. I'm sure it's in the sound file when I hit the table. So we enjoy Halloween, and we may have some Halloween-themed content later in the month. Can't promise anything. And then, of course, next episode is episode 400. And we still haven't decided if we want to do anything special for that or not. So,
but I heard there was a get-together.
I don't know. Nobody said anything to me. I'm the host of the show. You'd think somebody'd say something, but I haven't.
I think they're all staying at your house. I thought that's the
way. Again, nobody said anything to me. So
I wonder if Eric, Chris, and Nuggie all showed up.
Just show up. Like, we're here. Oh, hey, guys. There's plenty of everything. Plenty of towels, plenty of food, plenty of places to sleep. Come on in.
Those last three were a lie.
Yeah. That was a takeoff on Christmas Vacation when the family comes in. Yeah. Okay. Anyway.
It wasn't funny. So, yeah, we just walked
right Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. So that's cool. Also, we had Venom out this past weekend. I saw it. Charlie saw it. We don't want to take a whole episode to review it because it wasn't really worth devoting that much time to. But we may say a word or two quickly at the end of the episode. So Charlie wasn't a fan.
Chris had fun.
Chris said he had fun watching it. He did. So we may talk just briefly about that at the end of the episode. So a lot of cool stuff lined up for you tonight. We want to get right back into the action and get things rolling again and get back into the swing of things here with no more big delays or no big waiting periods between episodes. So we'll be back to start.
We'll give you what we can give you, and you like it or not.
Well, you'll get what you pay for, which was nothing. So Alden and Rowdy, the Comic Book Podcast, we'll be back in just a moment.
What's your favorite scary movie?
Showgirls. Absolutely frightening.
Alden and Rowdy, the Comic Book Podcast, we want you to reach out to us via email, especially with episode 400 coming up, because we want to hear from you. We want you to tell us what you got going on. Are you enjoying the show? Are you not enjoying the show? Just shout out, hey, John and Charlie, congratulations on 400 episodes, all that stuff. Please send us and we'll read and respond to those on the air. We would love to do that. So that email address is aldenrealitypodcast@gmail.com. All right, Charlie, you had our first book this week, The Unexpected number 5.
Yeah, I chose The Unexpected number 5 with this really cool tinfoil, which you can't even see because it's so dark.
It is a dark cover. I remember the chromium covers of the 90s. They were much lighter than that.
Well, these are just foil embossed because it's paper.
Yeah.
Not chrome. Well, this is the issue where Hawkman meets the unexpected, the group with Neon and Firebrand, I think is her name.
Right.
And, well, as usual, what happens when heroes meet each other, they fight.
Sure, they fight. Yes, absolutely.
Well, Hawkman, he's you've been messing with my past lives, and that's something sacred to me, because it's kind of funny. But they tell him that they've met, this demon that's been trying to, try to take over the Earth, and it's right. Onimar Sin. And we know him from the Ranthanagar War.
Right.
Well, and Hawkman's yes, I know exactly who this is, but whatever, because he's dealt with him before. And during we get a vision of Hawkman from his metal appearance.
Right.
Which he's like, I know that figure, that's Mandrake. And they refer to Mandrake, the vampire monitor guy, remember him?
Mm-hmm.
From Final Crisis.
Right.
And there's actually a scene where Mandrake feeds on one of the other episode, one of the other monitor guys. But at the end, Onimar Sin shows up and they're about to fight. So I think this is a 6-issue limited series, which is weird because I don't know why they did the foil cover if it was going to be that way, but it's a pretty good book.
How closely does it tie into the regular Hawkman book? Because I'm not reading this.
Well, like I said, they're facing Onimar Sin.
Right. Are the two books related? Do you need to be reading both of them? Okay. Because I was reading Hawkman, but I'm behind on it.
Yeah, but the issue comes out this week.
I didn't know if I needed to be picking this up.
In issue 8, he's going to go to we're going to see the Kryptonian Hawkman.
Dun, dun, dun. Hawkman's been alive on every world ever.
Who is Qatar All or something like that?
Qatar All. Hyphenated. Sweet. All right. Next book on the list is Batman and the Max number 1. So my history with the Max is this.
And this is not basically an IDW book, but it's branded DC IDW.
Yeah. So my history with the Max, I know it was like an independent comic that came out.
Ran like 38 issues or something.
Something like that. And I have no connection to that.
I've read it all now.
I haven't read any of that.
Because I read the Max reimagined or whatever, revitalized that they brought out.
Was it just like redone, remastered, you know,
kind of recolored? Yeah.
Yeah. So
it's really weird.
Was it originally black and white?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So
no, they just updated it.
My history with the Max is this: setting up late in our college dorm room watching MTV when those like 15-minute episodes of the Max would come on, and
basically they did like the first 5 or 6 issues.
It didn't last long.
Yeah.
But I thought it was a really compelling and interesting concept.
For her, I can be a hero.
And he was fighting all the is, and they looked like little white Smurf looking things or something. And so I was like, and he had like that one big claw, which I always imagined was a takeoff on like Wolverine or something.
Well, no, he had two claws.
Well, one on each hand. Yeah. But I mean, but just one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They were kind of digging claws.
Yeah. And so I was like, you know, he was a really cool conceptually conceived character. And so the idea that he lived in two worlds, like he found himself part of the time very Spawn-like, living in the alleys of New York City. And then other part of the time he slips into a dream world we call the Outback, where he's out in the wild and he's the champion. He's the king of the...
Which is basically like Julie's like subconscious memory.
Right. And so and he's like the ultimate warrior champion in the Outback. And she's the jungle queen.
Yeah.
And he's her lady and she's his champion and that kind of thing. And then he flashed back to the real world and she doesn't know him. And he's a bum living in an alley. And so I watched that and I was like, this is a really cool concept. And then it never really went anywhere and never did anything else with it. So fast forward.
Didn't they stop doing those cartoons like that?
Yeah.
Liquid TV or whatever.
It ended at some point. They were doing Eon Flux, but they did a bunch of Eon Flux.
The Head.
Yeah.
There was The Head, The Max, Eon Flux.
They did a bunch of that stuff. And Beavis and Butthead was part of that initially before it got branched out into its own thing. But, like I said, the Max thing never
went. MTV. Remember when they...
when MTV was good, back in the day.
Remember when they just played music videos? We're old.
So this comes out, and I was like, well, this looks really cool. The art is by Sam Keith, who is the original artist on it.
Didn't he write it, too?
I think so, yeah. Story and art by Sam Keith.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, well, this is really cool. Plus, his version of Batman is really epic looking. Except the Bat logo on Batman looks like a little heartbeat thing. It's just like it's a little bitty squiggly line, except when you get out to the end, there's two big wing projection things on. It's a really neat conceptual version of Batman. And
he almost does a Kelly Jones.
Almost. Batman,
but not an exaggerated Kelly Jones.
And so I wanted to read this to see what was going on. So basically it's the same kind of thing, whereas the Max once again finds himself in the Outback, but when it opens up, like something's wrong with the Outback. Like it's not the lush jungle type setting that you remember. It's more of a dried and becoming almost safari or Sahara kind of place where there's very, very rough grassland and in places where there isn't even any grass. So it's like the Outback is drying out and all the animals have started to die off, and then they're feeding on each other's carrion and stuff like that. And so it's like something's wrong with the Outback, and he can't put his finger on it. He doesn't know what it is. And then he flashes,
like
and he
wakes up. The blooming onion.
Yeah. And so, and then he wakes up, and he's this bum in the street again. But the artwork on it is really cool looking. Like he's got his little coat on, his boots and stuff. And it's just, I get a kick out of the artwork because I'm just like, he looks so cool. And so they end up, Batman picks him up.
You remember, like, how he drew, like, his feet? Because they were, like, they would just extend from his, like, and they were just, like, big, like, triangles like mm-hmm. that.
Right. So apparently this version of Max is in Arkham City instead of New York City or some other big metropolitan area. And Batman finds him. So Batman picks him up and takes him to Arkham, where he gets evaluated by a doctor they have. Their name is Dr. Despero. Now, I don't know if Dr. Despero or whatever, D-I-S-P-A-R-U, Despero.
Despero.
And so I don't know if this guy's a character from the Max comic. He might be, because he seems like he's familiar with the Max. And so Batman's observing him, and he's got him strapped down to a table.
Not Mr. Gone, is it?
I don't know. But he's got the Max strapped down to this table, and you can see the underside of mask of the Max's mask, and you can see his real chin underneath those teeth. I didn't know that existed. I thought that was the way his face was made.
No. And yeah, he's wearing a costume.
I never really knew for sure.
Yeah.
I didn't know if the Max was some kind of creature or if it was a person in an outfit.
Yeah, it's just a guy. Crazy homeless guy.
So that's an angle that I've never seen him from. And the idea that those teeth just stick out like that, you can see his mouth and his face underneath the bottom edge of it.
And later he becomes a horse, which is weird.
So basically...
And a bunny.
This guy's got some kind of teleportation equipment. Not teleportation.
Telepathy?
Telepathy, you know, mind control equipment. And he takes control of Batman's mind somehow or another while he's there. And Batman finds himself in the Outback. But Batman doesn't do anything in the Outback. He just sort of stands around in character poses. And he's talking to the Max. And the Max is trying to tell him what's going on with this world and who the Jungle Queen is. And it's a lot of information exchange. But these are big, beautiful portraits of these characters. I mean, like I said, the artwork is the reason to pick this book up. And so they decide to go try and find the Jungle Queen, and they find her, and she tells them that the Outback is dying, and it's their job to save it.
But it's Sarah, not just Julie.
Right. Which you're more familiar with those people than I am. And that they are her knights, and that she is tasked in with the charge of fixing the Outback. And so you flash back to the real world, and Batman's still there. And Batman's
good-looking penguin,
yeah,
for nothing.
And Batman's just like, wait, I'm back. Was I ever really gone? Batman's starting to question his sanity. He's like, I was in the Outback for like an hour or two, and I'm back, and it's just seconds later. He said, I must have just been hallucinating or something. He's starting to question himself. So they're bringing in the penguin, and they're strapping him down, and he's going to become part of that scene, too. Then suddenly Batman's back in the Outback again for no reason. And they're fighting this giant pufferfish helium thing that's floating in the sky. And it's about to kill them, which is where the issue ends.
Yes.
And so it's, like I said, if you want a compelling story, and they did like 400 covers of this thing.
Because it's an IDW book.
If you want a compelling story, this is really not the book. If you want to look at some great artwork, but it's highly stylized artwork, you have to have an appreciation for this character, the Max, and the artwork style he's done in. And if you do, you're going to love the way this book looks.
Well, see, the thing with the Max, the series went out, it didn't start out like highly intellectual, but that's the way it ended up. Like,
right.
So
on a really subconscious.
He may be just like starting that in this issue. Right.
So it could be. We could get a lot deeper before it gets before it's over with. All right, so I recommend that if you've not picked it up. If you don't know anything about the Max, this might be a good way to break into it. Or go back and pull those from your local LCS if they've got those old books. Or see if you can get them on eBay or something. They're really cool. All right, Charlie. Superior Octopus.
Yes, I picked Superior Octopus. Number one.
Charlie's going to give you all a view of it.
By Christos Gage. And... is writing it. Mike Hawthorne does the art. Wade Von Grawbadger is the inker.
Von Grawbadger.
Well, this is kind of interesting because, like, Christos Gage, and why I kind of picked this up is it says that it's a Spider-Geddon tie-in. I'm reading that book, and who pops up into it but the first, like, issue zero of Spider-Geddon number zero. It's the Spider-Man from the PS4 game.
Right.
And it ties in because Christos Gage was the co-writer with Dan Slott with that.
On the game.
On the game.
Right.
And I thought that was pretty cool.
Clever marketing, Marvel. Good job.
Way to go, Marvel. Right. But starts out, these guys are like terrorizing these people there on the street, mm-hmm. and they're robbing them.
Right, just street crime.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
So Superior Octopus comes in. They're like, oh, Otto, we know it's you. We're not going to deal with you and you're trying to be good act. And he's like, look, I'm fully like equipped with money and everything. You all need to stop robbing people. Join my gang and you'll make way more money.
You sound like Trump right now. Stop robbing people. Join my train. You'll make way more money. Everybody agrees.
But the thing is, they agree with it, and they go on because he makes them apologize and everything. Well, it turns out that Otto has cloned Peter Parker and his body together.
Right.
And has made a perfect clone from the Clone Saga. Not Clone Saga. But it was
some kind of clone type saga.
Yeah.
That had to do with the Inheritor.
Yeah, it was Spider. No.
Oh, no?
No. It was.
Because they were using. He was
it,
using.
That it was a Spider Man thing where Kane.
Oh, that.
Yeah, that.
Yeah, there was a whole thing a year or so ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, he's got a body that's a mix of his DNA and Peter's body. Mm-hmm. But. In this, he's had to go from New York because everyone knows him there, and he's went to California.
Right.
Which, you know, that's the big thing now. Yeah. Go to L.A.
Apparently that happens, you know, with this. It happens in the Venom movie. It's a very popular trope.
But
been used a
the
lot.
The X-Men are there already.
West Coast yeah. Avengers.
So, well, it's funny. He even makes a joke about them. He's like, those West Coast Avengers, they're a bunch of idiots, and they're going after...
Yeah, the C-listers that couldn't make the regular team.
Yeah, they're going after, like, small-time criminals. And, like, three, like, the most powerful Avengers villains are in Los Angeles for some reason. But anyway, he's working for Horizon University.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, wait a second, Horizon University? Because Horizon was the
Horizon Labs.
Was the lab that Peter was working for back in New York.
Before he started his own business.
So I was like, well, that's a little weird. And then it's Max Modell, or Model, he's actually running the university.
Mm-hmm.
And he's basically running it like his lab.
Yeah, same way. We're free to do what you want. You handle things the way you see fit.
And I was just like, well, this is really getting to be really odd. Because, like, I was like, what's next? Is Ms. Marconi going to show up? And she does show up. It's Otto's love interest when he was Peter Parker.
So here's my theory. My theory is that there was a segment of fans that wanted the Superior Spider-Man story to keep going.
Keep going, yeah.
And so what they've done is they have sectioned that part of the story off into a side thing that they can kind of keep the same elements and same characters in.
Which is crazy. But the thing is, it's like he even I can't remember. Yeah, he's talking to a firefighter. He goes, hey, weren't you part of that whole Hydra thing a couple months back?
Yeah. Don't worry
about it. He's like, no, that wasn't me. That was somebody else. I'm just taking the moniker, you know.
No. We were sure it's you. We were sure it's you. I was being mind controlled, all right?
Well, then he goes into, like, this base, and it's a Hydra base, and Arnim Zola's there, and Arnim Zola's like, ha, 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 you're going to join back with Hydra, and Dr. Octopus is like, no, I'm not going to join with you guys, because y'all are a bunch of idiots.
Yeah, once Hydra, always Hydra.
And they have a fight. Well, what happens is Arnim Zola brings in Gorgon, and Gorgon is a character from Secret Warriors.
Mm-hmm.
That was part of the Hydra group in that. And he's like one of the most powerful like people ever to exist.
Right.
But in this, him and Otto fight and Otto like webs him up there. Him and Otto are basically arguing while he's fighting.
Right.
And he's like, you idiot. He goes, you didn't know while we were talking that you had like unlocked Gorgon's most powerful weapon, and it's his eyes. Well, right. Because
he accidentally webbed his mask off. Yeah.
And what happens is Gorgon in this is a clone of the actual Gorgon. I don't know.
Did he die?
If he died or not, I'm not going to say for certain. But
he did, maybe.
I think they said that he did. But he turns Otto into to stone.
Yeah.
And then it's like, well, Arnim Zola's like, well, you idiot. You thought you were the master genius around here. And then all of a sudden, like, Otto comes in and breaks it. He goes, I told you I was even good at cloning like that.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, the whole thing, like, pins on the fact that, like, earlier on in the issue, like, where he loves the woman,
mm-hmm.
Maria, and he gives her a false name. He's in California under this false name. He goes by Tolliver.
Right.
Which I think that's a reference to something, but I'm not sure what. But I think they explain the issue. But she finds out that it's actually Otto. Because, like, I think where he's talking to, like, the firefighter or whatever, like, she, like, sees a video of him and, mm-hmm. like, oh, Otto Octavius is back in there. And he's been lying to her, like, because he's, like, trying to hit on her still because of that unrequited love thing.
Right.
Well, last four or five issues is a Spider-Geddon tie-in, which really didn't amount to anything except for Spider-UK in the inheritor slave guy that mm-hmm. they had. Is all that's left of their earth.
Well, one of the interesting things that I took away from the end of this was that when Otto, like, that was Otto in his body that was turned to stone. Yeah. But he had a clone waiting and ready to go.
Well, no, that was the clone that he had.
That's not the way I.
He had sent in the clone.
Did he? Because yeah. It seemed like to me he had the ability to transfer his mind from one to the other.
I don't think so. I think he sent in the clone first.
Because that's basically what the inheritors do.
Yeah.
And he said that they had said he'd used inheritor technology to create the clone.
Well, I think he sent in the clone first, but, you know.
I felt like reading it, and maybe I'm wrong, that in his moment of death, his mind was transferred out of that and into a waiting clone waiting by.
Might have been.
That's huge if he's got the ability to avoid death at every turn because he's got a waiting he's
multiple clone. Man now.
Yeah. So that's very, very interesting.
But, like,
it was a strong issue. This Spider-Geddon story looks like it's pretty good. I read Spider-Geddon Zero despite the fact that I haven't finished the PS4 game.
Have you read all the previous Edge of Spider-Geddon books?
Yeah. So I'm kind of caught up. Although I didn't read all of Spider-Geddon the first go around.
Spider-Verse.
Yeah. So I read some of that, but I didn't read all of it. I didn't finish it. Brilliant. But it seems like this idea of multiple Spider-Men in multiple realities is a theme that Marvel has hung on to for a long time now. I mean, they've been going on this, what, 3 or 4 years now? And it just, you know, I feel like most Spider-Fans.
Well, no, this is like the sequel to that.
Right.
But they branched that off into, like, other books. Where Venom had his whole Edge of Venom verse, where all the Venoms.
It's a concept.
What I'm saying is, Marvel basically can't be like, this is what we're doing, we're done. That we got to do it with everybody else now.
Well, that's my point. They don't ever seem to have the ability to close the door on anything. Yeah. And so we've even got a feature film coming out about it. It's an animated feature film, but it's a feature film. So I'm like, you know, they really seem like they want to take an idea and really run with it.
Run it into the ground, usually.
Yeah, so I'm.
But that's why I was kind of hesitant to get this because I wasn't going to get it at first because I was like, well, Dan Slott's not doing it because he left. I was like, who are they going to get to it? And I found out that Christos Gage is going to be writing it. So I was like, that's interesting.
Right.
I'll read it.
Hey, Charlie.
Yes.
All right, so we're getting ready to talk about Justice League number 9.
Yes.
Do you remember, like, during the No Justice miniseries? Or shortly thereafter, one of the two. Maybe the first couple issues of Justice League.
I think it was the first issue of Justice League.
They destroyed the moon?
It destroyed the moon.
You remember that? I remember that. Nobody's talked about that since it happened.
And I think they were like, because I think we thought at the time it was a training exercise.
Oh, I thought maybe it didn't really happen. Yeah. Like they imagined it or something, or it was an illusion or something.
Or it wasn't our moon. It was a fake moon or something like that.
Or something. So I'm like, all this time, I'm like, does the Earth have no moon? This is issue 9. We finally find out If Superman's up there rebuilding the moon in issue 9, I was like, wait a minute. You're telling me that for 9 issues, of course, I don't know how long that is in comic book time. It may have only been a day or two. But for 9 issues, we've had no moon? Does anybody remember Thundar the Barbarian? Do we not know how the apocalypse starts with the destruction of the moon? Okay, the tides come up over the cities and all that stuff, and volcanoes erupt, and you got mutants running the earth and savaging people and killing people, and you got warlocks and monsters and magic returns. That's how it happens. The moon. That's what you got to watch out for. That's why Trump's starting Space Force, to protect the moon. Okay, everybody knows it. I am glad to see that Superman is repairing the moon in this first issue, in the first part of this issue.
Well, like I said, how is he going to do that and put it exactly the way?
Comic books require you at some point to suspend belief.
I have to suspend a lot of belief that he recreates the moon perfectly.
You know, so you're willing to acknowledge that he could gather all the particles into a location and create something. But, and maybe even a solid something.
I mean, technically, the moon is made of a certain kind of rock. Yeah, you'd be able to find those.
Okay, so they'd be all out there floating in space. And Superman is fast. He can use his eyes.
Microscopic vision.
Sure, he can find all the particles. Gather them into a place. He can even use superpower, you know, strength and pressure and heat vision stuff to fuse it together.
Well, what I'm saying is, even with heat vision, he's going to create some sort of loss of mass.
So you're saying it's not the same moon?
It can't be.
So when he gets done with this, it's the exact same moon.
Like I said, you don't know it, but like the moon is pockmarked with like a million craters. So, you know, to create the moon exactly perfectly is a little unbelievable.
This issue of Justice League was one of those sort of standalone issues where it was in between the events of a conclusion of a last story before the start of another one. And so you got to tie up some loose ends, and that's what this was. Here we have Batman being surgically rebuilt by Mr. Terrific's T-Sphere.
Well, he'd spent like the last two or three issues like sitting in that like ambulance chair or whatever after he'd gotten hurt real bad. Mm. Just there the whole time.
That's like a Batman's paraplegic. Oh my God. He's going to be in that chair from now on.
I was like, wow, they've really taken this Metron thing a little too far, haven't they?
I thought he was sitting in the Metron chair for a little bit. I'm like, is he keeping that? Has he got that in the closet and he pulls it out from time to time? But the thing about this is if Mr. Terrific with his T-Spears or whatever can repair Batman and recreate bone structure and stuff like that, why did somebody like Barbara Gordon have to wait for years with a crushed spine before she could get fixed?
And hers just automatically reverted.
They didn't even do anything for her. It just sort of finally healed itself.
So well, that happened to Batman too, but you know.
There's a lot of heroes, like sideline, lower-level heroes, that suffer a lot of horrible injuries that people look at them and go, there's nothing we can do. But Batman gets hurt, and we're reconstructing
his bones. Next issue I'm going to be talking about.
He's reconstructing his bones. That's all I'm saying. So and then you have a whole middle sequence here about Wonder Woman and Arthur, who've spent a lot of time together over the first arc of this book. And I wonder if they're leading up to an idea that Wonder Woman and Aquaman might...
She's just making her rounds through the Justice League.
She's going to date everybody in the league before it's over with. Of course, he's already married. That could be a problem.
No, they're not married yet.
Mara's not? I thought they were.
No.
Oh, okay. So
they've yet to be married.
Okay.
They've had problems because, like, the elders in the Aquaman society in Atlantis don't want them to be married because she's Zabellian.
Well, like I said, they've spent a lot of time together. They seem to understand each other. I'm willing to bet.
They both come from like places where they're royalty. And you know.
Right. So I'm willing to bet before it's over with, they could be in some type of temporary relationship. We also get they all have their own private space in the Watchtower or just Hall of Justice, whatever it's called now. And like everybody's just sort of set up as a showcase of who they are and what they're about, except Batman's, which is a locked bunker that says keep out. So you're not allowed to go in Batman's. But not a whole lot happens in this. Like I said, it's just sort of a showcase. There's a quick fight between Hawkgirl and Martian Manhunter. Yeah. It's not really a fight, but she seems like she's mad.
Yeah, he starts to train her because of her...
enhanced wings that he has now.
And she like gets mad because she's like, you didn't know, you didn't tell me I was part of the totality.
And he was like, I didn't really know. And then Batman seeks these, what are they?
Coronavores.
Coronavores.
On basically Superman. Saying sun.
They're sun leeches. But, yeah. You know, they eat sunlight. And so they apparently live on the moon for some reason.
Well, they lived in the shadow of the, they lived
on the dark
on side. The bright side of the moon because that's how they fed off was from the sun's
right.
rays.
So, but in all the issues where Superman's been on the moon, he's never run into these things before. But apparently,
they're new.
Batman's telling Superman, don't go to the moon.
Come on, man. The hole in the universe opened.
Oh, that's true. We got new stuff going on. So Batman's telling Superman, don't fix the moon, Clark. Don't do it. I have to fix the moon just exactly the way it was, Bruce. Don't do it, Clark. We can make the moon better. Better, stronger, faster. We can put guns on the moon. We can make it a defense station. We can do it better than it was. He's like, nope, we got to put it back just the way it was. There's a balance to the universe, and everything's got to be the same as it was. And so Clark fixes the moon exactly right.
Dogs and cats living together. Mass hysteria.
Clark fixes the moon exactly right the way it originally was, and Batman's aggravated about it. Turns out it was Batman that sicked the coronavores on Superman in the first place. And he could, with a click of a button, send them away. I'm like, Batman, you got control over everything. How do you do that?
Well, I like the fact that he warns them. He's like, no, Clark, there's a big, huge coronavirus.
Yeah, those other ones you beat up were just babies. This is the alpha. It's coming for you. It'll kill you. It eats sunlight. You're made of sunlight. Oh, my God. Run, Clark, run. And
Clark's like, no, I'll be cool. Don't worry about it.
Clark's like, I got it. He said, but it could kill you. Yeah, it could, but you won't let it, will you, Bruce? Dang it, no, I won't.
Well, I like the kind of like the fact that like everyone's starting to like know all of Batman's tricks and everything he does.
And they all make fun of Batman from time to time too. Clark does his impersonation of Batman, things like that. There was nothing significant that happened in this issue. It was just fun to read all the characters interacting and in a lighthearted way.
Yeah.
So, and plus we got this moon issue fixed, which was bugging me. So...
We finally got the moon answer.
That was important. Because like I said, Thundar the Barbarian, that's how it starts. All right, Charlie. Here's a big book that didn't necessarily come out this past week, but a week or two ago. And that's Heroes in Crisis, number one. So tell us about this.
Did you like this book, John?
I didn't know what was going on.
Have you
for most of it?
Have you haven't read earlier issues of Batman, have you, like before issue 50?
I read a few issues like 47, 48, 49, but not.
Well, have you read the ones dealing with the one character in this book?
What, Harley?
No.
What other character? Booster?
Yes.
And not specifically, no. Last time I said anything, last time I saw Booster Gold, he was helping Superman when he thought Jor-El was an imposter.
Yeah.
Okay.
In the Superman books.
Right.
Well, earlier this year, Booster Gold shows up, and he's, like, talking to himself all the time. And he's like, what do you give the man who has everything? And he decides to give Bruce back his parents.
Right. Even though, as Guardian of the Time Stream, Booster's not supposed to allow changes. Okay, all right.
So when this book rolls around... You have Booster, he's at a restaurant, and he's eating, right? And he's talking to the local people.
Oh, I also saw Skeets with Bane at the end of that one issue of Batman, too.
Well, I'm getting
to it. Okay, all right.
But he's at a local restaurant, Nowheresville, wherever, and he's eating food, and Harley Quinn comes in. And one of the residents goes, well, ain't that one of those villain people that you all fight? And he's like, yeah, it is. He's like, are you all going to fight? Yeah, probably. Well, that's what happens. They start to have a fight, and they fight throughout the issue.
Right. And while they're doing that, you see all these panning shots of these bodies from this crisis hospital that's set up out in the middle of nowhere that are dead and stabbed and crushed and heads caved in and things like that. And,
well,
your first reaction to that is, oh, God, Harley's going on a killing spree.
Well, no, the thing is, it's like they start talking about salvation. Salvation is a thing we've only heard about previously.
Mm-hmm.
Like in the Flash, at the end of the Flash War, Wally just goes off to Salvation.
Right.
And apparently nobody knows what it is. Well, it turns out it's like a farm in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, like the middle of Wyoming or someplace. Yeah.
And I think what it is, it's like Clark's like, hey, I grew up as a farm boy. And I grew up pretty good, right? And he's like, well, maybe if, like, these heroes are in trouble.
If they've been psychologically damaged.
Or whatever, we can send them there
and they
for a few weeks and they can be healed, like, psychologically.
Right.
Help
get them. Some therapy, you know, that kind of thing.
Well, Superman rolls up on this farmhouse and he's scanning the area and he sees bodies everywhere. I mean, there's Lagoon Boy. There's Sizz and Steel.
Some of these are
JSA.
Yeah, some of these are well-known characters in the DCU that appear to be dead.
Yeah, and like I guess Superman scans them all and he goes, they're all gone.
Yeah.
And he goes up to this character named Hotspot. And when they see the characters, you get it like them standing in front of something explaining why they're basically there in Salvation.
Mm-hmm.
So the closer he gets to the building, Superman, he goes into the building, he opens the door up, and who's he see in the floor but Arsenal and Kid Flash.
Right.
And he said, Arsenal's gone. Kid Flash is gone.
Yeah, which is odd, because they just resurrected Wally.
Yeah, Wally's gone. And you get a thing of Arsenal talking, and like I said, while this is all going on, Harley and Booster are just fighting, you know, it was right. Like they're having a knockdown, drag out fight. And Harley's talking about like, well, you don't understand why I'm doing this, blah, blah, blah. And Clark goes in, and he sees like the people of the who ran Salvation are dead, too. And there's something written that says the Puddlers are all dead. And he goes, Puddlers, that's a weird word. I don't know what that means. And Batman basically says, well, it's the sidekicks, though, like people who aren't more experienced at doing something.
Right.
And at the end of the issue, but Booster finally gets Harley into this, like, knocked him down or whatever. And he goes, Harley, you got to tell me. He's like, why did you kill him? Because they're talking about Salvation. He goes, you were with us the whole time. You were in the meetings or whatever, where we were having these round tables or whatever. And he goes, why'd you kill everyone? And she goes, well, that's the funny thing, hon. I didn't kill him. You did.
Right. So he's had some kind of lapse.
And
went crazy and killed a bunch of people.
And he doesn't realize it.
Right.
And I was thinking, that's not in Booster's character to do any of this.
Right.
And I was thinking, was he being controlled?
We don't know.
Because, like I said, you saw at the end of issue Batman 50
mm-hmm.
that Skeets is there.
Right, with Bane as a cohort.
So wonder if Skeets is being controlled by Mr. Mind again. Or wonder if Mr. Mind is taking over Booster.
Possible.
And it's just like, it's freaking me out. But, like, I keep, like, reading, like, where, like, they keep saying, like, Tom King has, like, confirmed that, like, the deaths are permanent.
See, that's what was I thinking.
But I'm thinking it's Booster Gold.
Oh, it is Booster Gold. In addition to that, they just resurrected Wally.
Yeah.
Why would you resurrect him to kill him?
Yeah.
That makes no sense.
It doesn't make any sense to me either. But what I'm saying is it's Booster. If he does all this, he can automatically go back and correct it.
And I can't believe Dan Jurgens is not standing somewhere going, no, that's my character. You can't do that with it.
Well, I don't understand why they did it to, what was his name, Mockingjay or whatever?
Mm-hmm.
Bluebird.
Yeah.
And Bluebird's a guy who can change size, which he was just in another book that I was reading recently. But I was just like, all these characters, like I said, they killed like 10 people in this first issue.
Yeah, and there's someone like this, some of them are significant characters.
And here's the thing, though. I think they did it for shock.
They can't be permanent. It's got to be undone at some point.
Tom King to me is not a great writer. I mean, some of the stuff he does is pretty good. Like Mr. Miracle is pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
But the whole, like, have you read any of that? Are you reading that?
No.
Okay. The whole thing is, the book has been about is Mr. Miracle gets, he's with Big Barda and she finds out she's pregnant. And then there's this civil war that breaks out on New Genesis and Darkseid where all the gods are fighting.
Right.
And I mean, everybody dies. Allfather dies. Then Orion becomes like Allfather.
Mm-hmm.
And then like him and Scott have a fight and Scott kills him. So like Scott is Allfather.
Right.
By the end of issue 11. But like while you're reading the book, like the book will like do like a weird TV thing where it'll glitch out. And when it comes back on, like people's eyes would be a different color. Like things would be like different. And at the end of issue 11, you understand, but you're thinking like, what's going on? It's like, is this Scott going through the Omega Sanction, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like this is one of his lives that he's living where he like experiences a bad thing, because at the end of the book, like he has to give up his son to Darkseid to stop the war. And at the end of issue 11, he does that, but he ends up, he kills Darkseid. And at the tail end of the book, in issue 11, Metron shows up at the end of the book. And he goes, well done, Scott. You've passed the test. And he goes, this whole thing has been a training for you, like a possible like life training thing for you, so you can be able to go kill Darkseid. It's a complete and total like mind mess up. And I'm like wondering if like that's what's going to happen in this book.
And I can't believe what we've read here is actual.
But that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Because like the characters were took down way too easily.
Right.
Like all 10 of them. Like Citizen Steel should have been a match for him.
Right.
A lot of those characters should have been a match for Booster. Because Booster's not a great fighter.
No, he's more of a pretty boy.
Yeah, by any means necessary. We know he can when he wants to. And someone said, well, he took down Superman in one of their fights. Okay, that was Booster then, you know. That was Booster pre-New 52.
Mm.
This is a different Booster. And like I said, I don't know if I like it now. It's 9 issues, which is another thing that bothers me, because is it going to end before it ends? Are we going to like read another book like 2 months from now and be like, oh, well, that whole Salvation thing, blah, 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 like Metal happened.
Mm-hmm.
Like Metal was like 2 days.
Right.
But it lasted how long? Like 8 months?
Oh,
9 months?
About 9, 10 months, something like that, yeah.
But that's what I'm saying. It's like, I don't know if I can like this or not.
Yeah, so you're saying if this story gets drawn out, but other books are referring to it after it's completed?
Yeah.
And but they come out like in during issue 2 and 3, yeah. I see what you mean. I don't know. You know, that's that whole Secret Wars thing. You know, while that book's going on, other books have moved on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like I said,
it was an odd issue.
I don't know what to think about it, because like I said, Mr. Miracle's good, but I've read several of the Batman issues.
Yeah, some of them I've not liked.
Batman, a lot of the Batman stuff I just haven't liked.
I agree with you. Some of it has been weird, like that one issue where the Joker beats Batman up, and I'm like, what? So,
well, me and a friend were talking about it, like during the earlier run, like the first 20 issues or so. Which is when I actually stopped reading regularly.
Mm-hmm.
They talk about Batman as a kid, and like after his parents died, he actually tried to commit suicide. And I'm like, well, that's against everything Batman stands for, because that's Batman quitting.
That'd be him giving up.
Yeah. And we know that's not the case. Batman never gives up.
Well, unless you're saying that that was in his state of mind before he became... Before he set his mind to to be Batman.
Don't explain it, John.
I'm just saying.
Don't sit there. And...
It's a revelation we didn't need, you know, about a character that was already fully formed.
But he's done that in other books, too, where characters have...
Yeah, but can you imagine the challenge of being a comic book writer in today's world where these characters have got 80 years of history?
Well, the funny thing is, like, before the issue number one of this came out, he said someone already figured it out.
Somebody out online? Who
the killer was. Yeah. So I was like, okay.
So is he not changing it? Because sometimes they'll change it. You remember, Armageddon or whatever it was? Armageddon 2001?
Yeah, it was supposed to be,
Supposed to be somebody, Captain Atom, or it ended up being Captain Atom
instead of Hawk.
Hawk?
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe.
Of Hawk and Dove.
Yeah. So, yeah, that happens from time to time.
I don't know, but that's what he said, so.
Speaking of Tom King, I wanted to talk about, they came out in the last few weeks, Batman 55 and 56. Just for this, really 55. Not so much 56, but 55, I think, was the better issue. Because in 55, all right, so you've got Batman, who had gotten jilted at the altar. And
that's the team up with Dick.
With Dick, right. So he got jilted at the altar. The
other cover is like a more nostalgic where Dick's a young boy or whatever.
Right. So
a young Robin.
Young Robin. So
a young Robin.
Hello, old chum. And... Charlie's making a motion that nobody can see but me. So you've got Batman who was jilted at the altar in 50, and then they took three or four issues to do Batman on jury duty, where he talks about him bringing in Mr. Freeze. And during that issue, Bruce Wayne was on jury duty for Mr. Freeze, who was going to jail, and everybody wanted to convict Mr. Freeze because Batman had brought him in, and everybody believes in Batman, and everybody was convinced that Mr. Freeze was guilty.
It was like 12 angry men.
12 angry men, right.
Bruce Wayne was the dissenting.
Yeah, was the only guy over here going.
Voice. And, well, he could be innocent.
And so he was like, no, I think maybe he's innocent. And everybody's like, you're crazy. He said, well, let me try to explain my thoughts, and if you disagree, we'll go forward. And so his idea was basically that Batman's human. Batman makes mistakes. Batman's not the imperfect godlike being that you all seem to worship him as. And he said that. And basically what he says without saying it in so many words, because he can't tell them who he is that he had just gone through something very painful and he was too quick to react in that situation. And he basically pinned something on Mr. Freeze that Mr. Freeze didn't do. But Mr. Freeze confessed to it because he was afraid of Batman. And when he realized what he'd done and what Mr. Freeze had copped to, even though Mr. Freeze didn't do it, he felt like it was his job to get him off. Yeah. So those were three or four issues, and it was a good introspective into where Batman was then. And so after that's over, so Batman says, I need to go back to basics. He gets the trunks back on his costume. He goes back to the trunks instead of no trunks. So now you've got Superman and Batman back in the trunks. Yes. And this issue is like a Batman and Nightwing team up. And it was a lot of fun because through the whole issue, you've got Dick, who's acting much more like Robin the Boy Wonder than he is a grown-up Dick Grayson. Because I've seen Dick Grayson be very serious. But he's not acting serious at all through this. I think his feels like his mission on this particular night is to cheer Bruce up. And so he's poking fun at him all night. He's going, why did you call me old chum? I used to think it was because you're my friend, but I don't think that's it at all. And Batman's like, well, why did you think I called you that? And he said, I think chum is like fish guts. I think that you were telling me that I was horrible, that I stunk. And he goes, you were pretty lousy back in the day. So you admit it. And that kind of exchange while they're patrolling and while they're swinging from rooftops. And so Dick would go, let's play a game. Let's play a game. What kind of game? Let's jump off his building. The first one to shoot the grapple hook loses. I'm not playing that. Chicken. And he jumps. So Batman like, and he jumps too. And about that time, Batman shoots his grapple hook and like Dick goes, ha, I win. But then Dick sees the bat signal in the sky and he goes, oh, that's what it is. Yeah. It wouldn't have nothing to do with the stupid competition. So they just basically, the whole night was like that. how they were having fun. They were taking down like these pharaohs, and Dick kept pharaohs. Well, there's like, it's almost like a King Tut type character, but he's more like a mummy. And I don't know what his deal is. He's just a sideline character. Doesn't matter. Doesn't even, and
it's Eddie from Iron Maiden.
Could be. And but like Dick keeps bringing the puns thing and things like, oh, King Tut, you know, this or that or something. I can't even remember the jokes he used. But Batman's, it's like, you never laugh at any of my puns. He goes, they're not funny. Yes, they are. And so it was just, I swear it was like Bruce was talking to 15-year-old Dick Grayson again. So Commissioner Gordon calls them to a rooftop, and they go, and they meet up with him, and he starts talking about some crime that needs investigated or something. And all through the issue, you keep getting glimpses of this guy who's got one arm. Uh-huh. And his name's the KG Beast.
Yeah.
All right. He's been sent to Gotham.
He was like Bane before Bane was Bane.
Right. So he's been sent to Gotham to do something.
Alexi.
But you don't know. You don't know what. Right. Huh. And so while they're standing there on the rooftop, you see that he's loading a gun with a scope in a far window across from where the PD building is. And while they're all standing there talking, you see bam, and like Dick goes down, shot in the head.
Mm-hmm.
And like the KG Beast had just basically assassinated Dick Grayson. Now, I don't think Dick's dead.
No.
But he might as well be. And so that was such a powerful... You talk about Tom King being a good writer, bad writer. To me, that was a really powerful issue because it spent... So the whole issue being lighthearted and fun up until that moment, and then there was like a climactic, oh my God, thing that happened at the end. The next issue was pretty good as well, but not quite as good as that, where it was Batman furious. Batman, I think, is the idea from Tom King's point of view is to break Batman down.
I think so.
And to destroy him as much as possible. You remember Daredevil went through that a while back, where everybody he loved died or got hurt or something. He lost his career.
Well,
he lost
everything. It's all Bane, remember?
Right.
Bane's controlling everything.
Right. And so.
So anytime something bad happens to him, it's probably Bane.
So it's just like one never ending bad thing after the other going on in Batman's life right now. And so he spends this whole issue trying to track down who it was. And he does find him by the end of it. And KG Beast actually kills his own dad because he told him that he had. His dad talked to, because he's Soviet. He's Soviet, right? And he's KGB, his dad talks to him, and he goes, you never told me what happened to your hand. And he goes, the Batman had me in a trap. The only way I could get away was to cut my arm off. So Batman took hand. You let him live. You are weak. And he goes, actually, I was just in Gotham, and I killed the Batman's son. Oh, so he took your hand? You took his son? He goes, yes, this is good. You still should have killed him. You are weak. About that time, KGB turns around, shoots his own father in the head. So how's that for weak, old man? And so by the end of it, Batman is marching through the snow in Siberia to track him down. And he, at the end of the issue, is standing outside the shack where he's at. So there should be an epic fight next time. We'll be interesting to see how that goes. So those two issues were really good, particularly 55 where Dick gets shot. We'll see, you know, how it wraps up. Like I said, Tom King is on sometimes, he's off sometimes, but I think I see the narrative in this particular 100 issue long story arc of his is I don't know what kind of redemption lies for Bruce at the end of this, if any, but through the course of it, the whole idea was to destroy Bruce Wayne as much as possible.
Yeah.
To really deconstruct the character, tear him down back to his basic roots. He's going to lose everything. He loses the person he loves, his romantic interest. He loses his family. He'll probably lose his money by the end of it. He'll lose everything. He'll be homeless and living on the street with no money, no nothing.
He'll be living with a roommate, having to take pictures for J. Jonah Jameson.
Well, you know, something. So that's where we're at. All right. That's it for this week's books and the last few weeks' books, actually. We'll be back in just a moment where we'll talk very briefly, I promise briefly, about Venom, and then we'll close the show out. You guys sit tight.
There's something very important I forgot to tell you.
What?
Don't cross the streams. Why? It would be bad.
I'm fuzzy on the whole good-bad thing. What do you mean bad?
Try to imagine all life as you know it stopping instantaneously and every molecule in your body exploding at the speed of light.
Total protonic reversal.
Right, that's bad. Okay. All right, important safety tip. Thanks, Egon.
Alden and Rowdy, the comic book podcast. Check us out on the internet at arnetcast.podomatic.com. You can catch our show there, and we've got a whole plethora of previous episodes that you can go back and listen to. Everything since our relaunch in mid-May. So it's all sitting there waiting on you to listen and enjoy. Alden and Rowdy, the comic book podcast, providing the best content anywhere online. All right, Charlie, let's talk just briefly, ever so briefly. Ever so briefly about Venom. Venom came out this past weekend. Normally when a movie comes out, we'll take a whole episode and devote to it, but not this time. You didn't like it, and I thought it was just so-so. So let's just throw it around real quick and then close the show out. So I took my son. We had a decent time with it. It was not as bad as I thought it would be. Whoever made the trailers on this movie were horrible at it because the trailers did not look interesting or appealing at all. And it actually turned out, in my opinion, to be a slightly better movie than the trailers led me to believe. So that's my...
It couldn't have been much worse.
No. Now, I know that you feel a little differently. You feel like it was the worst of the worst.
No. I just think the movie dragged for, like, 77 minutes. Seriously, it's like...
I didn't feel like it was quite that long. I don't know. Maybe...
Seriously, from when the movie...
I assume you timed it by having the number of minutes.
Yeah.
Okay, so you know. I don't know.
Like it started at 1 o'clock. It might even be like 74 minutes with trailers or whatever. So it might be like an hour and a half movie or whatever.
Right.
But we do not see Venom until like the 70-minute mark. At all.
Well, but we see
symbiotes.
Right.
And that's the one thing that like really stood out to me.
What?
The word symbiote.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Because remember in the first trailer, we call them symbiotes.
Symbiotes.
And what I also believe is that everyone in the movie used that exact term.
Do you think that was the way they told them to say it?
Uh-huh. And I think they had to ADR every person who used that word every time.
So they had to go back and edit it.
Yes.
And
I was like, he's about to say it. Symbiote. I was like, I just see him in the studio. Symbiote. Symbiotes. You know, because they got to.
Yeah. Say it differently. Put a little more flair. Yeah.
So that was one thing that really stood out to me. Get into the story. Eddie Brock is drummed out of New York. They don't really explain why. They say he
did something stupid on his previous job.
Yeah, he worked for the newspaper in New York called the Daily Globe.
Yeah, I don't know.
Not the Daily Bugle.
I never heard of that publication.
But he's drummed out of that. He moves to Los Angeles for
a few years. Yeah. I guess you got to go. So, well, I guess his girlfriend worked out there. Maybe he went out.
They didn't say that they were together.
I assumed maybe he followed her out there.
Well, he said that they were together in New York.
Right.
So I guess
maybe he followed
her.
Yeah. I'm saying she got a job out there and he followed her. I think that's what maybe.
But I think that's kind of funny timing coincidence wise is like, well, it's a good thing because I just got drummed out of New York, you know?
Yeah.
So
which makes you feel like she's probably put up with a lot of crap out of this guy.
But they're living a happy life together or whatever.
They seem to be a very happy couple. And he seems to be, at the beginning of the movie, happy and productive and well-respected on his job.
Yeah.
He's like Action Sam, you know, or Action Joe on the W8 news team. And he's the investigative reporter
scene. Who's like one of the big guys, like, or whatever? Like,
kind of like Geraldo
or John Stossel,
Maybe somebody like that digs into things.
But what I'm saying is, he's one of those, he's an investigative journalist,
right?
Which is weird because, like I said, he reads off of a little file of facts thing that he writes down everything in, like he can't remember,
like Columbo,
Like he's interviewing Riz Ahmed Bodhi from Star Wars Rogue One.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, "Oh, what about these fake death, death lawsuits. And he's like, what are you talking about? This interview's over. That's a lie. He goes, no, I got it written down right here.
Like, that makes it real.
That's not what it says right here. And I was like, you wrote that down, you idiot. It's not like you have actual
proof.
You just wrote it down
off of something you read.
But that's the thing. His girlfriend works for this company called the Life Foundation.
Right.
And she's a lawyer for them. And I guess she's privy to
cases
files or whatever, like the wrongful death lawsuits.
And sure.
So he sneaks in while she's asleep. He's like, hey, I got to interview this guy tomorrow. So what he does is he goes down to her computer. He sneaks into it and he copies these files.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when he confronts the guy, his name is Drake. It's something Drake. He
not the rapper.
No.
Yeah.
No, he confronts him and he gets fired.
Right. Because he makes a phone call.
Yeah.
And so the editor of the paper or the news channel.
Who is Ron Cephas from first season of Luke Cage and This Is Us fame. Very popular actor.
Right.
I don't know why he was wasted on this movie, because he's literally in like two scenes that don't even add up to like maybe 4 minutes.
Well, they probably offered you a chunk of money and you took it.
But anyway, it's him and he fires him. Well, and that, the girlfriend gets fired too. And they break up. Then the movie fast forward 6 months.
Right.
6 months.
So in 6 months' time, he loses everything.
Yeah.
He loses his apartment. He loses his job. He still has not found gainful employment anywhere else.
Even though I don't know how he can live in Los Angeles without having a steady income.
Well, I guess he works here and there as a dishwasher for a few nights here.
They don't say that.
But
they don't say anything.
Maybe he had some money piled away somewhere. I don't know.
But anyway, the start of this movie, when the spaceship crashed down.
Right.
Happens at the beginning of this movie.
At least they went with that. I was afraid they had created these things in a lab or something based on the trailers.
But there are three symbiotes that come to Earth.
John Jameson Easter egg in it there.
Yeah, and John Jameson is the pilot of the spaceship. They're trying to... They said they were examining a meteorite.
Comet.
A comet.
Yeah.
In space. And they found these organisms on it.
Mm-hmm.
And they bring it back to Earth. Well, the thing is, while they're coming back to Earth, spaceship crashes. And the symbiote goes from John Jameson Jr.
Right.
It's just John Jameson.
Yeah, because Jay Jonah is not John, I don't think.
I thought it was.
Is it?
I thought it was John Jonah Jameson Jr. Because remember, his dad is JJJ Sr. I think it is. I think it's...
They just don't call him that?
Yeah.
They just call him John?
Yeah.
Okay.
So anyway, he crashes, comes to Earth, and apparently he's bonded with the symbiote. But the thing is the symbiote, according to this movie, can only be bonded with someone that's genetically able to bond with them.
Yeah, a perfect match. Similar to how you can't get an organ transplant from just anybody. Yeah. They've got to be the same blood type or something.
So within the first 5 minutes, he's dead. It moves on to an Asian woman, because they're in Cambodia, which is weird.
Malaysia or someplace like that. I forget where.
But she gets it, and it's Michelle Lee, who's a very famous Chinese action movie star.
Mm-hmm.
And she goes to like some village there where she beats up a bunch of people. And she kills a bunch of them because spikes come out of her and kills everyone that's attacking her.
I wondered about that. Wouldn't there be a loss of mass if they don't reclaim those spikes? I'm not sure.
But, well, there'd be evidence, you know.
Right.
Like, oh, my God, what killed these people? Oh, my God, look at these things protruding from their front and backs. Anyway, it's instant death for those guys. And she gives up the symbiote to an older woman.
Right.
Like I said, this is 6 months ago.
Right.
All this happening 6 months earlier. So we fast forward to like where...
Long story short, that symbiote is trading partners making its way somewhere.
Yeah, and we don't know where.
Right.
But more than likely Los Angeles.
Right. It's got to meet up with Eddie sooner or later, so you know it's making its way to America.
So like I said, there are three of them, three symbiotes.
Mm-hmm.
They've lost one, so there's two. Yeah, of
one of them died because they tried to pair it with a human.
Yeah,
they rejected. Uh-huh. And the symbiote died in the process.
Yeah.
Okay.
So there's, or was there four?
I thought there was three.
Because there was the girl in the hot temperature and the guy in the cold temperature room. And the girl with the cold temperature, the hot temperature was the one that was Venom.
Mm-hmm. And the cold temperature one's the one died.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there's three.
Yeah.
So the guy...
counting Riot that's coming from across the world.
Then it's four, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, the guy at the Life Foundation is like, oh, we can cure cancer with this or whatever. And
that's not why he wants it.
And he's doing experiments on him, right?
Right. This dude's a mad scientist to the nth degree.
Well, yeah, because he starts abducting homeless people off the street.
Which in...
Because he wants to go to straight to human testing.
In California, it's a big problem, and there's a lot of homeless people. So, especially in cities like San Francisco and Los Angeles. So, nobody misses these people.
But he wants to go straight to human testing.
Right.
Because, the first animal, has it and dies. He's like, well, I think we should go to human testing right now. And they go to human testing. Well, the lead scientist of this is Jenny Slate. She's a real popular actor, actress, actor. And with, a bunch of geek stuff. Like, she's been in a lot of movies and stuff. But she plays a skittish, nerdy.
Yeah, just a nerdy, introverted kind of character.
So she tracks down Eddie.
Right.
And Eddie's...
I remember when you were here 6 months ago and you threatened my boss.
Yeah.
You seem like the only guy I can go to with this.
So she tracks him down. She's like, yeah, he's killing people. And he's like, when'd you go to the cops? Because he basically is like, I don't care.
Yeah.
I got screwed over by this guy. You deal with him. And she goes, well, he threatened my family. So I was like, okay, she's got a family. She's got something into it. So she leads him back to the Life Foundation. And I don't know, but every time they showed the Life Foundation, it was always night for some reason.
Yeah, that place doesn't
exist. Every time.
Place doesn't exist in the daytime.
The hours from 3 o'clock at night to 5 o'clock in the morning, it exists between that time.
Mm-hmm.
Because the moon was either coming up all the time or the moon was going down and the sun was almost coming up. It was only they only showed it near dawn.
Right.
Every time they showed this place.
Right.
But he goes to the facility. He sees this homeless woman that he's been helping out, they're friends. She starts to attack him, but then it's Venom, and Venom transfers from her to him.
Mm-hmm.
And everything's fine. Like I said, everything's fine to this moment. He feels sick. He's like, oh, everything's going on. He feels sick. He goes home. He eats a bunch of frozen tater tots.
And rotten chicken out of the trash.
Pukes it up or whatever. And then he calls his ex-girlfriend, ex-fiance, because they were about to get married before all this, before she dumped him. And he's like, oh, I'm sick. And she comes in, she's like, oh, we got to get you to a doctor, blah, blah, blah. And they take him to the doctor. Well, she's dating a doctor. And the doctor puts him in the MRI, which sets off Venom.
Right.
And he leaves. And that's when the Life Foundation guys come and find him. And he goes through and he attacks the Life Foundation guys. And Venom just shows up at that point in time.
Right.
But then she comes and gets him because he's like, oh, because he goes to he gets this, like, this, the, he goes back to his, the news agency,
mm-hmm.
jumps up to the floor or whatever, loses Venom when he's, like, at the top of the thing. He's like, oh, this is amazing.
Yeah, whatever. It goes all the way to the peak of the building, goes, this is amazing. By the time Airplane goes over and it's really loud. Yeah. So the sound disrupts the symbiote and symbiote retracts and it's just Eddie, and he's falling off. And he's falling halfway down the building when symbiote finally regains control and grabs the side of the building.
So he goes in, leaves the information that he's recorded.
You forgot the really good part where he has the motorcycle wreck. And all of his legs are broken and crumpled into little bitty pieces. And I was like, oh! And then the symbiote comes out and just and fixes all that. And I was like, the symbiote is the thing to have. You would live forever. Well, that, it doesn't eat you.
But that's the thing. It's like, after that happens, he escapes from them and, like...
The symbiote tells him, no, you will be okay. I will heal you. I'll make you better.
Which is weird because it's like his voice doing it.
Yeah.
It's Tom Hardy, which is funny because Riz Ahmed does the voice of Riot later on.
Oh, really?
Which I was like, it sounds like the same voice. Why didn't you just get, like, the guy who does Candyman to do the voice? You know, the guy who did Zoom's voice?
Right.
I was like, when did you just get him? Instead of, like, modulating Tom Hardy's voice or Riz Ahmed's voice, just get him to do it. But anyway, there are a bunch of stupid, like, interactions between him and Venom, like, throughout the movie.
Yeah, they talk to each other like an old married couple or something.
It's like, just, he's like, I will heal you.
You can't heal me. Yes, I can. Or at some point he goes, very hungry. Need to find food, else your liver is starting to look good and juicy.
But there's really no real interaction between the two, except for, like, after he swims away. Because that's when him and Venom have the talk, where he explains what he is.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, you were perfect. Because I thought that was, like, the coolest part of the movie. After he, like, first showed up or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Which, the motorcycle chase was stupid. Because it's Venom, like, they're jumping over hills, and Venom's, like, latching on to things to making sure he doesn't crash.
Making, like...
He does the Batman turn by...
Like, I was going to say, 90-degree turns by reaching out a tentacle and grabbing a light pole and going around the corner.
Which was dumb as can be. But...
Oh, I like the one where he lays the bike down, but not before the symbiote creates a pad to lay the bike on, slide underneath a truck or something, and then picks it back up and takes it back off.
Yeah, like
almost like an oil slick.
It's not a slide. Yeah, he's riding the Venom puddle.
Under, yeah.
Or whatever. And I was just like, oh, God, this is really dumb. And, but like I said, like, after all that's done, he escapes and, like... He goes to the water, and then the Venom comes out from behind him and starts talking to him as, like, the head that's still attached, like, on his arm or chest or somewhere. I thought that was pretty cool because that happened, like, a couple times in the movie. I was like, you know, that's something they've done in the comic book where Venom would talk to whoever's with him. I was like, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I like that. I like that.
But like, they were, like, the whole thing with, like, him climbing the building.
Yeah.
And I was like, really?
Well, he gets up to that floor and he leaves the phone up there for his boss. Like,
he's like, you want to jump?
He says, jump out the window. And he goes, no, I don't want to. And he gets on the elevator.
He goes, I think I'll take the elevator. Because he's got some really weird English accent.
Yeah.
So he's like, no, I'll take the elevator. So they go down and, like, there's, like, all these security guys there. And Venom just goes all out on him.
Right.
And that's when his girlfriend comes in. She's like, oh, my God, I saw that monster. What was that? And she's like, oh, I got to take you back to the hospital. And she takes him back to the hospital. And they figure out the MRI, like, creates these vibrational, like, output.
Yeah, which, like, we've already talked about earlier, is scientifically unsound. MRIs don't use high-pitched sound waves to take pictures of you. It's got to do with magnetic forces and elements they put in your bloodstream that allow it to be picked up on an image.
Yeah, which is patently ridiculous. So she's like, hey, we can separate you. And, like, she turns the machine real up real loud, and they separate him, Eddie and him, and Eddie runs away. And the symbiote just goes through the vent in the ceiling. Because I guess, like, she thought that they were in a sealed room or something.
That he starts oozing out that vent in the floor, and that little dog was standing there.
Yeah, it takes over the dog.
I thought it was going to eat the dog just a minute.
I thought it was going to, too, but it takes over the dog. She runs out. She sees the dog. Because the dog closes its venom eyes.
Yeah.
And then I was like, well, that's weird. So then the Life Foundations catch up to Eddie. They take him back to the Life Foundation.
Because he has no powers now.
Yeah. So they take him back to the Life Foundation. They start to experiment on him. And by that time, the symbiote that was across the ocean has made it back to America.
Right.
And has, like, taken over Riz Ahmed's character.
Right.
Drake's character.
Now, suddenly his goal has shifted.
Yeah.
From finding a way to take mankind into outer space to, I'm going to pilot this ship myself into outer space and get all my symbiote brothers and sisters and bring them back to Earth.
Yeah.
So they tell him, no, you can't go pilot that ship by yourself. You're the CEO. You're crazy. I'll kill you all. And he just basically makes these big sigh things come out of his hand and, like, kills a bunch of people.
Yeah, and we were talking about it, like, apparently, like, Riot's the only one who can control, like, what his, like, weapons are.
Yeah, like, can form spike balls.
Venom can't do that.
Yeah, Venom's got, like, tentacles, and that's it.
And, like, he tells Eddie at one point, he's like, on my planet, I was just like you, a loser. And I was like,
that's why I like you.
I was like, wait a second. He would have no concept of that.
Yeah. Coming from an alien world where everything is goo, the idea that there's some type of hierarchy or rank and who's a leader and who's a follower and who's a winner and who's a loser, those concepts would mean nothing to these
kids. I mean, even like if he like saw it in Eddie's mind,
yeah,
it would still be like, I don't have any clue what that means.
The closest thing that I think he would actually come to saying is I was a...
He's stronger than me?
He was stronger than me, or he was a leader. Because there is, like...
Well, no, he calls him a team point leader or something like that.
He was a leader and I was a follower. I could see they having that mentality because even in insect world, there's queens and there's workers.
But he goes, like, you, I was a loser on my planet. I was like, really? Venom was a loser?
Yeah, like, he never could get any dates. He drove a sucky car. He had a stupid 9-to-5 Joe job. You flip burgers, you know, just a real loser.
But they kill the Skirth
woman. Millie Vanilli and his tape deck. You know.
They kill the Skirth woman. She dies, so, like, her character is kind of pointless.
Yeah, I thought she died rather quickly and easily.
Well, like I said, her whole character arc was kind of pointless. Yeah. Where she's like, oh,
I've come to you instead of the police to protect my family.
Yeah, protect my family, and she just gets killed
like
2 seconds later.
Poor family. They got no mom now.
So then there's the big, huge fight between Venom and
Riot
on this 3-mile-long gantry to a space shuttle. It's a long gantry.
It's a long walk.
Like, I thought I would start seeing the Fast and Furious 5 memes of, like, how long the airport runway was, remember? Mm. It's like, the airport runway in Fast 5 would have had to have been, like,
60 miles long
or something like that. But no, it's like, a good 2.5 miles because the Life Foundation's here, and the gantry's, like, out in the middle of the ocean.
Yeah.
So they're fighting, like, the whole time, and they get to a point to where they fall down into, like, where the thrusters are almost, which I was like, you know, if the thrusters go off, they're going to create enough vibrational tones or whatever to actually get them off. But then Michelle Williams is like, no, we just flip this button and turn the speakers up or whatever.
I can play dirty too.
Yeah. Mm. Because, well, how Eddie gets the symbiote back, she meets him in, like, the middle of the night in the forest around the Life Foundation. Like I said, everything's night every time they go to the Life Foundation. And yeah, she's got the venom.
So here she comes walking sexily, I might add, as Lady Venom.
And she kisses him.
And the Venom symbiote just sort of flows off of her.
And I was like, really? She would kiss him? Or he would stand there and be like, ugh.
Letting Venom kiss you with those teeth? And that tongue?
But anyway, they have the big fight, and Riot gets knocked off, and Venom gets knocked off Eddie. So you're like, oh, well, how's that going to work out? And Riot comes back. Mm-hmm. He actually does kill Eddie. Eddie's dead, laying there for like a while.
He's impaled.
And, yeah. So Riot climbs back up into the spaceship thing, goes off, and then like Venom like comes back after the whole Sonic thing, covers him up, and they there's this big explosion in space, and so Riot's gone, and like Venom makes a parachute, I guess. I don't think it was wings.
No.
Which is weird because in the comics
it reminded me of the webbing parachute that Peter makes.
But yeah, but like he gets caught in that, and but he's like, it's on fire, and he's like, well, this will be the last time. Because earlier in the movie, I didn't say it, but Eddie and Venom have her talking, and Venom goes, hey, by the way,
I've got a couple weaknesses. It's the Superman scene from Lois and Superman 1 where she goes, oh, we see, I sort of have trouble seeing through lead. Oh, that's interesting, writing it down. That nobody will use that against you later.
But the thing is, it's funny because like when he tells her that,
mm-hmm.
and she goes, oh, so it's like your kryptonite. Sound vibration is your kryptonite.
He goes, yes. Oh, and fire. I was like, geez, symbiote, keep a secret, why don't you?
So, like, you think Venom and Eddie are completely unbonded because it seemed that Venom had died in the fire explosion.
Right.
But, like, the next day, you see him and her, they're on the steps outside of her house, they're talking. It might not have been the next day.
It could have been
like
next couple week.
Day or whatever.
Well, it's been a little while because he said something about having a new job.
Or yeah, he's gotten a new job. Someone he's become an investigative reporter after he was severely demeaned and destroyed the building he worked at or whatever.
Yeah.
But he gets together and like you hear Venom talking to him.
So then they start to lay ground rules.
Yeah.
You know, like, all right, now you people, but we're not going to eat good people. We're only going to eat bad people.
But mind you, this is at the end of the movie.
Yeah. I would have thought that would have been something they'd have done in the middle of the movie.
Venom has already ate like two people's heads off.
Yeah.
That's all he's done.
And he's not really eating anybody completely.
But like all the cops that he was fighting before, all the security guys, he didn't bother them. He didn't eat any of them. He didn't eat the people who attacked him at his apartment at first.
Yeah.
But now, all of a sudden, Venom's like, yeah, I've got a severe taste for human flesh right now. Even though they made like references to it where like he was trying to eat meat or whatever.
Right.
There was a scene where he's trying to plead with like the doctor and his ex-fiance in a restaurant, and he gets in a cold crab pond. He's eating lobster tank, and he's eating
the... He grabs somebody's steak off the plate, takes a bite, and goes, this is dead. Like, it's nasty.
Yeah. So it's like, the whole really, like, eating people thing never really came up until the
end. They didn't work that into it very good. Like, if Venom went on a person eating spree,
yeah,
it would have been better.
It should have been in the first part of the movie.
Yeah.
Not, like, at the tail end. Well, I'm going to eat humans now. He's like, no, we're only going to eat really bad people. And there's the Stan Lee cameo, which I kind of thought was kind of dumb, too.
Yeah, well, because as time goes on and we get new Marvel characters being introduced, these are characters that Stan Lee hasn't had any association with. He never worked on Venom. He never created Venom. So it kind of feels weird seeing him in a Venom movie.
Yeah.
Unless you're just saying, well, Stan Lee represents Marvel Comics altogether. And if that's the case, then I guess it makes some sense.
Because he was in the strip club in Deadpool.
Right.
So, you know, that was kind of dumb.
But he says something weird like, you know, you two are going to be okay, talking to both Eddie and the symbiote. And something along those lines. And he makes reference to you two talking. And there's nobody there but Eddie. So it's like, I see the truth because I'm all-knowing, you know, Stan Lee. I see everything.
But then again, it's like they go off and, like, he's back at his, like, little Chinese bodega place in California, a little store. And a woman gets robbed. And
the second time.
Yeah.
Same guy.
Well, he's running a protection racket.
Right.
So he comes back for more money, and Eddie turns into Venom and eats him.
And she goes, oh, my God, Eddie, what's wrong with you? He goes, I got a parasite problem. Sorry. And he leaves.
And that's where the end movie ends.
So
then we get the mid-credit sequence.
Yeah, mid-credit Easter egg kind of thing. I'm drawing a blank. What happened?
Eddie he's on his new assignment.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been asked for by a prisoner.
Oh, yeah. Quentin. I'm sorry. I don't know how I forgot that. Okay.
In San Quentin or
right. Whatever. He got a big interview. Yeah. But he was talking to his girlfriend.
Like,
about.
The FBI won't even, like, touch this guy. Like, right. This, like.
It's his last request before he goes to get killed.
Yeah. He's, like, the only interview he's ever allowed.
I guess in California, they don't have death penalty out there, I don't think.
Well, it doesn't matter.
So, anyway.
But he's, like, giving him this interview. He's like, yeah, the FBI can't even crack this guy. But he asked for you personally.
Yeah.
So he's like, oh, really? It must be a big thing and whatever. He goes in and starts talking to him where it's this guy in a cage.
Right.
With this 3 foot tall.
Red clown wig.
Like, it's not like any red haired person you've ever seen in your.
It seriously looks like Ronald McDonald, red clown hair wig.
No, because Ronald McDonald's hair is a lot brighter than this is. Like, this is deep magenta, like almost purple red color. Like, I mean, it was that dark red. And what it turns out. I think
they're trying to make it look like blood, maybe.
Well, no, because. Like running gushing blood, maybe, yeah. Not like scratch blood. Yeah, probably. But it turns out that it's Cletus Cassidy.
Right. Who is.
Played by Woody Harrelson.
Woody Harrelson. Was he getting old for that kind of thing?
And I said, it's not the fact that I'm making fun of Woody Harrelson because he's getting older.
Mm-hmm.
But his face has filled out now a little more than it used to be. And anytime I think of Cletus Cassidy, he's skinny scarecrow guy. Right, you know?
He's a twig.
I mean, this is like Woody Harrelson, like, looks like he's bulked up because Woody Harrelson doesn't have hair anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So he's bald. So, like, you could tell he's still bald with the wig on,
mm-hmm.
which is weird too. But, like, he's like, you know what? When I get out of here, there's going to be some carnage.
Yeah.
And that's where it ends.
Right.
And then there's another one where it's just 3 minutes of Spider-Man Into the Universe.
Right.
Which I didn't see any point for it. I don't think it's deleted footage.
No.
I think that's going to be like footage that's actually in a movie.
Mm-hmm.
But like the credit for the theme song for the Into the Spider-Verse was the last song on the Venom soundtrack. And I was like, are they going to include that in the Blu-ray like that? Is that how that's going to work out?
I don't know.
Because that seems weird to put like just 3 minutes of a movie into another movie.
So.
But I thought the acting was not great.
No, it wasn't Oscar worthy. That's for sure.
I mean, I don't even think it's Bane worthy. Because I thought him and Bane was like him playing Bane. And Dark Knight Rises was a lot better.
Yes, you know you want it to be true.
Because he was kind of scary in that. And I was just like, I don't get scary from Eddie Brock. I get dumb, like, pseudo-reporter guy.
I am the Venom symbiote. You will do as I say.
With pizza.
Search your feelings. You know it to be true.
But, Michelle Williams, who plays his ex-fiance, who's an Oscar-winning
mm-hmm.
actor, I think she was wasted in this movie. I think Ron Cephas was wasted in this movie. I think Michelle Lee was wasted in this movie because they were just given nothing.
Right.
even the bad guy, I think he was given
What do you think about this term that Tom Hardy's been throwing around on his media circuit that he's been doing about the Venomverse? Because he's talking about at some point, we would like to maybe get like Spider-Man and Venom together but if not, that's cool. He said, because they've got, the Marvel Universe. We don't need it. We've got the Venomverse. And I was like, the Venomverse?
Well,
the Venomverse?
Well, the way they kind of played this movie out was like there was a story called Planet of the Symbiotes,
mm-hmm.
where like a bunch of the symbiotes had like invaded New York, where like everyone became symbiotes because a big lash came through that. I think that's what they were trying for in this movie.
It sounds like Spider Island.
Well, it kind of is, but...
How many different times have they done? Everybody in New York is a Hulk.
World War Hulks. I mean, they did that, too. Yeah. But that's the thing. It's like, I don't see it happening. I mean, they can do that. But like I said, when they can't even use the word Daily Bugle.
Yeah, it's weird. So we were talking about this earlier. I don't know, under the current arrangement, what Sony has rights to and what Marvel has rights to. Because Marvel have made 3 movies with Spider-Man in them.
Yes.
And another one coming up. But in all that time, the only extra...
Well, theoretically, they made 2 of their movies and 1 with Sony.
Which one did they make with Sony?
It's Far From Home.
Oh, that was made with Sony?
Yeah.
But still, that takes place squarely in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Because of Robert Downey Jr. and everything.
Right. Yeah. So the question then is... Who has rights to what? Because of all the stuff that they've used with Spider-Man in the Marvel MCU, they have never used anything other than Aunt May from Spider-Man's universe. They haven't ever used any of his ancillary characters. They've not used J. Jonah Jameson. They've not used villains.
There is an Easter egg in Far From Home in Homecoming, where he's on his computer at home.
Mm-hmm.
He's got an email from J. Jonah Jameson.
Well, still, that's different than having the cast person playing J. Jonah.
But still, it's there, though.
So they haven't used the Daily Bugle. They haven't, you haven't seen Mary Jane Watson, although you've got some girl, what's she calling herself, MJ?
Michelle.
Yeah, or something.
Like I said, that's fine, because he could later on go...
But it's almost like Marvel only has Peter and Aunt May. That's all they have access to. Sony kept everything else. But Sony, if that's true, is not using any of it. Sony's over here playing in Los Angeles with Venom, and they got a Black Cat and a Silver Sable movie coming out. And a Morbius movie coming out. But they're not using J. Jonah. They're not using the New York City backdrop. They're not using the Daily Bugle. They're not using any of these things. They're not using Gwen Stacy, Mary Jane Watson. They're not using Harry Osborn, Norman Osborn. They're not using none of that stuff.
Well, supposedly the movie Venom was based on a storyline called Lethal Protector, where he goes to Los Angeles, but that's after him and Spider-Man have fought in New York. So the whole Los Angeles thing is fine, but to not include the Daily Bugle, you own that.
Right. That should be under your rights and privileges that you have, as I understand it. I don't know. And see, here's the thing about it. Unlike Fox, Sony is never giving Spider-Man back to Marvel. So we're always going to have some kind of weird married arrangement between Marvel and Sony.
But from what I understand, the whole Tom Holland thing is only 3 movies long.
You mean 3 movie appearances or 3 dedicated movies where it's just...
3 him movies. Yeah, him alone.
So Far From Home will be the second one.
Yeah. Huh? So after that, it's 1 more for him... Marvel and Sony working together.
And then Sony has the right to come back and do whatever they want to again.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I'm wondering if it's going to be just like a trilogy. But here's the thing with what you said with the whole Venomverse thing. To me, that just is just an actor saying, yeah, give me money to do more acting roles.
Yeah.
I've heard him say, oh, yeah, me and Spider-Man are going to do a thing. I've also heard Todd McFarlane said that he wants Spawn and Spider-Man to meet.
In a movie?
In a movie.
That's never happening.
But that's what I'm saying. But there's this whole news cycle where every time you, like, we still get the whole thing with, what's her name? Abigail Spencer or whatever. Like, she's open to do Peggy Carter season 3. Well, of course she is. Well, she's an actor.
And she's not doing much of anything else.
But that's what I'm saying. It's just like...
And please continue to use me.
But that's what I'm saying. But yeah, like, CBR or Bleeding Cool News posts this stuff all the time. Like, it's news.
Mm-hmm.
It's not news. I could say, well, if I get $1 million, I'm going to buy Trump Tower or whatever.
You wouldn't buy Trump Tower. You'd have to have it fumigated.
But what I'm saying is... It's me saying, yes, if.
Yeah. Yeah, that could possibly happen in another parallel universe. Write it up as an article.
But yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's not news, but yet every day it's like, Tom Hardy's open to do a Spider-Man Marvel Venom movie. Well, of course he is. You're going to pay him. He's a friggin' actor. What else is he going to do? Sit on his rump?
I'll take it. Give me that green.
I mean, that's just silly to me. Every time I see that, it's just like, well, Luke Cage is open. All the people from the Netflix shows are open to do movies with Marvel. Of course they are.
Well, yeah, they would love to do that. They were secretly hoping all along that this whole Netflix is a separate thing and it'll never cross over with the movies. They were always hoping that'd go away.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. They're always saying, well, yeah, they're open for a movie. Of course they are.
Sure.
You want to give me $10 million to go do a movie? I'll do it.
There's nothing that Marvel does through Netflix that would hold its own movie.
But even if they won't even show up like... Okay. They won't even show up like in the movies, though. Like, you're not going to see them in Annihilation or whatever is going to happen. After Infinity Wars. You're never going to see them.
All right. We said we were going to do that quickly. We did it anything but. So let's get out of here before the show, before my wife yells at me anymore, because we got to turn some air conditioning back on. I don't have my paper here, so let's see if I can do this from memory. Alden and Rowdy, I want you to visit us on the internet. Our web address is arnetcast.podomatic.com. Send us some email. Episode 400 is coming up next episode. We want to hear from you. AldenRowdyPodcast@gmail.com is the email address. Check us out on the Facebook, social media, Twitter, twitter.com/AR_podcast for the show, twitter.com/John Loveless for me, xOnslaught for Charlie. We're all available on Facebook. You can just search for us there and you should be able to find us, me and Charlie, and the Alden Rowdy page itself, which if you were online tonight, you could have watched us on Facebook as we were broadcasting live.
We had at least 3 people.
We had a couple, and we're hoping that'll grow as time goes on.
Nuggy.
Oh, was Nuggy here? Oh.
Oh, 4. It was Nuggy, Dan Lloyd, Chris Martin,
and Dwayne Feenstra. Came in for just
a Feenstra.
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 Alden and Rowdy Podcast is a proud member of the Comics Podcast Network. You can check out our show as well as a bunch of other really cool shows over on their page, comicspodcast.com, comicspodcast.com, to check out the network. Anything to add to that, Charlie?
No.
All right. Episode 400 coming up next. Looking forward to it next time. Until then, my name is John.
I'm Charlie.
And we're out. You guys have a good night.
You know what I got today?
Parking ticket.
No.
I'm just guessing. It seemed like something would happen.
Where'd that come from?
I don't know.
I drive safe, damn it.
I said parking, not driving.
It's all the other idiots that don't know.
It's a parking ticket. You have a
parking ticket.
You park illegally somewhere. You get a parking ticket. Oh. You park in a handicapped spot. You park in somewhere where there's a meter and it runs out.
I have been thinking about parking in a handicap.
Seems like something you'd do.